Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning. I almost introduced it and said, this is Coffee with the Sarlos.
It is. But there's a whole intro for that.
I know. I don't know why I wanted to introduce it. But anyway, we're missing our poor little Winston today. The dogs are at home at Kelly's place because
they're little shits.
Okay. I was going to say because they're a little bit loud sometimes.
They're cute, but they're little shits.
Okay. Today's story is about a client I'm going to name Kehlani.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's not her real name, of course. We always make up the client's names to protect their identity.
Except Dee Dee.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She's always going to be our exception, eh? So Kehlani, at the very beginning of the session, by the way, all of her sessions are over Zoom.
Oh, she has multiples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Dozens. Yeah, there are lots of sessions with her over years. So, and the very first session when I meet her, she says that, after we go through consent, she says, I'd like a medical intuitive reading and then an open session. And the guides begin by saying to me, we want you to take a look at some cancer scans. And I'm like, oh boy, seriously? And they go, yes. And it's in the breast area. She's going to ask you about this. We want you to see exactly where they are. We want to tell you where, like right here, like, and so they point. They literally say, like, in this area, and it's all on one side. It's one breast. And they tell me how it goes under the armpit and where, and like down and up, like under the arm. So they show me that, and through the scans. And also, I'll say a guide showing me on a body so that I really understand and that I really can pinpoint and say this to her. So just before I tell Kehlani this, I said, well, wait a minute. Am I the one? Am I supposed to tell her that there's cancer? And the guides say to me, you're not going to confirm cancer. You're going to say that you see black dots. That's what you're going to call them. And I said, well, she's going to ask me if black dots means cancer. And they said, oh, we know. And we're telling you that you're going to say that this is what you see, but that you can't confirm that it's cancer. We want the doctor to confirm. And she's going to confirm for you that she has a doctor's appointment to do this. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she has some level of awareness that something's going on. And they said, yes, she's had some tests. She does have an inkling. They haven't confirmed anything. They've simply told her that they want her to come back for results. And I'm like, this is why she's booked with you. And I'm like, oh, okay, but we don't want you to be the one to confirm, even though she wants you to be the one to tell her before she goes to her appointment. But tell her about the spots, where they are, and that you know that, and that we've told you that she's suspicious, she has ideas of what's going on, she has a doctor's appointment coming up. Tell her everything so that she trusts you. We want her to keep calling you. We want her to keep seeing you. So I'm like, okay. So I tell Kehlani all of these things, and she sits and looks at me, and she goes, yeah. She says, this is all accurate, Karen. She says, so why won't they confirm if it's cancer or not? And I said, I don't know. She says, well, can't you ask them? And I said, that's as much as they're willing to tell me. I'm telling you everything I'm allowed to say. And she goes, okay. And you can see that she's not happy because that's what she wanted to know. And then she moves away. She says, okay. She says, I see that I can't push them to tell me. I'll go to my appointment. And she says, so can you just go into open for the rest of the session? And I go back to the guides and say, what else would you like to tell her today? And they said, oh, we want to spend a portion of the session on talking to her about her past. And I said, okay, what about her past? And so the guides explain that she is in America. And I said to her, oh, Kehlani, the guides say you live in America, United States. The United States of America. And she says, yeah. She says, that's right, I do. She says, of course. And she goes, don't you? And I said, no. I said, I'm not in America. And she goes, oh, okay. And then she says, keep going. I don't understand why this is important. I said, it's just facts. It's just making sure that we have factual information. Then the guides say that she actually comes from Europe. And they describe the culture that she comes from. And I said, so you're actually from Europe? And she goes, yeah. And the guides say, oh, she wants to be you to be more specific. Could you say Poland? And I said, is that correct? You're from Poland. And she says, I am. Then the guides move in and say, in her culture, and I'm not saying all of Poland, I'm not saying all Polish people, I'm saying for her and her family, her culture, she's raised in a kind of Christianity. And I see signs of that. The guides show me, like, I'll say a cross and religious things. So I ask her that, and she confirms that as well. And she's just kind of listening. You can see, like, what is she getting at? And the guides say, well, she's raised in a culture where she's really taught to believe that she is to do certain things in a marriage, that she's supposed to be married, first of all, that she has to have children, that this, like, these are life goals, the family. And a career. Now she's being told that she has to add a career to it as well. But also that while she adds the career, she's still supposed to serve a husband. She's still supposed to carry the largest portion of the workload at home, even though the two of them are equally working and could be sharing responsibilities at home. And the guides say that even the women in the culture that are in the same position as her are not going to support her if she wants more support at home, or if she doesn't buy into what her culture wants. Then they tell me that she moves to the United States, and she believes that when she moves to the U.S. and finds a husband, that a United States man is going to be more involved in raising their children, more involved in housekeeping and sharing. And she thinks that in the U.S., that the average U.S. guy, all U.S. men, are right in there helping their spouses, and that everything is 50-50. And she thinks this is called progressive, and that men in the United States are progressive. And so I tell her this, and she goes, that's very true. She said, it's part of the reason why I really wanted to leave my country and go to the United States, because I did believe that men in the U.S. were more progressive. And then the guides say, but she didn't choose one of those men. She thought she did just simply because he was an American and born in America, but he was not, those aren't his beliefs, and that she actually picked a man who did want and did believe in a wife and kids and the whole family thing and the job, but that he still believed in the same things that some of the people in her own culture had believed, where a woman did more work at home. And so she ends up in a marriage identical to what she would have got in her own country and in her own culture. And she doesn't understand that because she thought it was different. So she stays in the marriage thinking that this is eventually going to change, that somehow this guy is going to get it and be like these other American men that she believes are all these American men. So she's quite confused, and she stays in that, but she's not happy. And as a result of these dynamics and what she's chosen, there's actually quite a bit of abuse from this particular husband. So I want to be careful here, because this is her story. And yes, there's some generalities of what Kehlani believes, and I want to make sure that people listening to this don't get stuck in the same generalities that Kehlani did. This is a particular session for her, and her husband. So what the guides then go through in the session with her is talking to her about how her husband is extremely neglectful, how he brick walls her in conversations when she approaches and says, hey, I thought we were going to share things in the workload, and how he just shuts down, how he's dismissive of what she says. And then after the dismissive and the walking away doesn't work, and isolating her by leaving the house and going out and doing fun things and leaving her alone to manage the workload, including raising a daughter, she keeps trying to confront him and saying, hey, I didn't think this was going to be like this in America. I thought we were going to do it this way. Then when he realizes, oh, I can't just always leave the house, then when he has to stay in the house, say it's late at night or whatever it is, he's staying in the house, he becomes verbally abusive towards her in all kinds of ways. Whether it's brick walling, whether it's actual confrontation, putting her down, criticizing her, dismissing her, he does the whole nine yards. And she doesn't understand any of the behavior, but she keeps waiting for it to change and for it to improve. And she believes that if she loves him more, and that it's a lack of love on her part, and that if she just loved this man enough, then the love she gave him would be what he needs, and that need would be felt. Therefore, he would be the husband she believes he is or can be. And so the guides say, you really have to break this down and explain it, because you're dismantling a belief system, but you're also talking about what her hopes and dreams are and saying that they're not realistic, that they're not going to happen. So the guides ask me to explain it to her, and I do my best. And through the whole thing, Kelly, she fights me. And she constantly says, but I love him. And I say, yes. The guides. Okay, you go ahead. I'll go it's back to my story, but it's you not go love. Ahead.
It's not love. You're looking at reality, a person who is being very mean, consciously choosing to be very mean to you, very neglectful, mean in a myriad of ways. And you're saying, but I love him. What is it you love? Because the actions don't say that he loves you. The words don't say that he loves you. The lack of presence, physically or emotionally, doesn't say he loves you. So what exactly is it you love? Or do you just like the idea of being with someone? Or are you just so terrified of being alone? And I'm not saying that as a judgment. That clearly comes from her conditioning of this is what you're supposed to do in life. So here's her conditioning telling her, I'm supposed to believe these things. We got married, therefore I must love him, right? But if you actually sat back and thought for yourself, which was January's Sips of Sanity, by the way, you would recognize this ain't love. And not to mention, when you stick around with someone and you're like, who you're choosing to be is not who I really like, but I think the version of you that I've dreamt up and called your potential, I love. You're saying, I need and want you to change in order for me to love you to your fullest extent. That is also not love.
Mm-hmm. So that didn't happen in the first session.
I would imagine it didn't happen in the first 12.
Okay.
Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I'm just going to continue with the story. I've got everything written out according to sessions. So... but I wanted you to be able to say that because, well, some people are going to agree with you right off the bat. Other people that are listening to the podcast are going to go, holy Christ, I needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. I needed to hear that that's not love. I needed to hear. And I mean, I know some of the people who are our patrons are going to go, oh, I know what that's called. That's called limerence. Mm-hmm. Kelly and Karen talk about limerence, the state of hopefulness that somebody will be who you want them to be in spite of the fact and the evidence that they are not, means that you have to stay in a state of mind that is not a reality. So I know some people are going to get that now. She did not. And she mm-hmm. did not get told what limerence was. She simply had in that session, outside of the medical intuitive, the guides wanted to bring up and introduce to her, this is your past. this was your conditioning by society and by family, and that including the women, you are not being supported to be in a healthy reality. And she went, what? And the guide said to her, the women in your life, your own mom, your own mother-in-law, your own sister-in-law, your own brother, your own sisters.
Before we do this,
nobody's going to support
this
you.
This is pissing me off. Even the women in your life, how are they supposed to? We've just described what Kehlani was expected to do, mm-hmm. meaning handle the career, handle the kids, handle a deadbeat husband. And we're blaming other women who are under the same belief system for not supporting her. That's fucked.
Well, the guys weren't blaming the other women.
No, but that's how people talk. And that's exactly, I'm not blaming you. I'm saying
go
that's
ahead.
Also how it's being presented. And it's part of the conditioning. Even the women in her life weren't supporting her. And we vilify them. And it's like, at what point were they also supposed to have the time and the energy to support another woman in as shitty of a situation as Kehlani? I hate this story. I love this story because of what it's illustrating. I want to be clear about that. But like, if your rage meter is up today, fair.
So the end of the session comes and she says to me, okay, I have to leave. I'm going to my appointment. Thank you for the session, Karen. I'll get back to you.
To confirm that all this rage has manifested into breast cancer.
That's that. So we're done the session. I move on with my day. She goes to her appointment. I see when I'm at my computer late at night working, just doing prep for Patreon, that her booking has already come in.
Keep in mind, this was probably years ago.
Oh, yes. This is years ago, people. So if you're sitting there going, wait a minute, how did she get in that fast? You're booked 2 years out right now.
You did say this person happened.
Oh, many, many, many years ago. Yes. So she books her session and I get to see her. I think it was like 2 days later. And she shows up 2 days later and she says, okay. And she says, I'm just going to start with open and what the guides want to tell me. And the guides say to me, she's been diagnosed. She knows it's cancer. Put it on the table and tell her that we know and that you know that it is a cancer diagnosis, and that she had a conversation with the doctors about what she was looking at going forward and how serious this is for her. She's going to ask you if she's going to live or die because the doctors have told her she has very little chance of survival. This is really serious cancer. So I'm like, okay, I will repeat because I can only repeat what the guys want me to say. So I say all of this to her right off and she just bursts into tears. And I said to her, oh my goodness, like, can I be Karen and step out of channeling and just be with you for a few minutes? And she said, yes. So we were quiet and just sitting together. And I asked her, like, what do you need? Like from me as Karen, like as another person. And she said, just to sit with me, just to be with me as I'm processing this. Okay, we did that together. And then she said, okay, I'm ready to go back into the session. I go back into the session. This is very important to say because over the years, Kehlani and I have all of our moments together where she asks me to step out and be Karen. And at times where I have to say, I need to step out of channeling and be Karen because Karen wants to cry or Karen wants, I just want to be with her woman to woman, mm-hmm. as opposed to being in the session and I'm channeling and the professional is sitting in front of her. So there is a division that we create that's very purposeful to say, I want to be Karen, or she will say, can I have Karen, please?
Yeah. For anyone who's wondering why, like, I would imagine that she has no compassionate witness in her life to metaphorically or literally hold her hand through what she is enduring. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that this only gets worse as the cancer progresses because the attention and the needs become bigger right? Mm-hmm. And if that's taking away from a neglectful husband, he's got to escalate his behaviors to keep pulling attention and her energy toward him.
Okay.
So she would need someone to sit with her in those moments to be witnessed.
That's right. And the guides told me to literally give her a timeout, to signify mm-hmm. that I'm exiting channeling. Professionalism has taken a break, and that I'm showing up compassionately as another person for her. Mm-hmm. So we did that for many years, constantly, and where I needed it and when she needed it, and where it summed many, many times, whether she needed or I needed it, it ended up combining that we both did. So I'll leave that and continue. So then the guides talk and show me where she has a conversation with the doctor. And then she shows more doctors. She shows another doctor coming in, and it's a plastic surgeon. So she's having a consult about what's going to happen in the future, as this could, you could have this. So if we remove this breast, if we remove both, here your plastic surgeon's going to come in and discuss this with you as to, I'm this person. Hello, I'm just stepping in to meet you. This is way down the road, but I just came in to say hello. So she ended up meeting another doctor, like, really fast. And that put her through the roof in anxiety. And she lost it. The doctor left, and then she blew up in rage at the physician who was sitting in front of her that brought the other doctor in. She said, how dare you? I'm not ready for this. You're overwhelming me. And she expressed a lot of emotions. And the guide said, we want to show you that so that you can say it to her, so that she knows we know. And I'm like, oh, I see what's happening. You guys want to keep showing her that you're with her. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes, we're going to do that right from day one. So I said to Kehlani, oh, the guys are showing me that in your doctor's appointment, another physician showed up. And she went, yeah. And then I explained it to her about his specialty and why he was there, and her response. And then her physician's response, where he didn't handle it well, that she got angry. He got mad. And then she was trying to defend herself with a physician that was mad at her for her response. And how it all just went sideways on her. And how confused she felt that the physician didn't understand her position. And if you're here telling women this and you're a medical doctor dealing with people with breast cancer, why aren't you prepared for these emotions? And how the guides were trying to say to her, we were there for all of it. We were with you. And then I see an old man standing there, and just
dead or alive?
Dead. And I really take a good look at him, because just an old man to me. And so I say, well, wait a minute. I said, Kehlani, there's an old man there. And she goes, what do you mean there's an old man there? There wasn't. I said, no, a dead old man. And she goes, oh. She goes, can you describe him? And I said, yeah. And I said, this is what he looks like. And she goes, oh my God. She goes, that's my grandfather. And she goes, he is dead. She goes, oh my God. She goes, my grandfather was at the meeting with me. Oh my God, my grandfather knows I have breast cancer. Oh my God, that means everybody in the spirit world knows I have breast cancer. All my guides, all of the dead people, all my aunts and uncles. Oh, and then she just cries, because now she's realizing, oh my God, I can't expect my humans to be here for me, because they're all caught up in their shit. But I can count on my dead people. I can count on my spirit guides. And she feels so alone with her human beings. Mm-hmm. That this is finally like, okay, I'm not alone. And I said, so you have all these dead people and all the spirit guides and Karen. So you have a human now. And she's like, okay. The session ends, and I see within a couple of days that she's booked another appointment for the following week. Now, over over a couple of years, I think it was about maybe close to 2 years, it was just under two. She doesn't see me every week. She sees me when she needs to. So if anybody says, oh, is this a weekly thing? No. Sometimes there's two sessions in 1 week. Sometimes there's no sessions for a month. Sometimes for 2 months. It changes. It depends on what she's going through emotionally with her husband. But what I want to point out here is the consistency that her own family don't support her through her breast cancer. And, or that she feels that. So she shows up at each of the sessions talking about how she's had chemo and radiation and how she's still cooking. She's still cleaning the house. She's trying to sleep, but the baby is dropped off and put on the bed beside her. And then, as her child grows a little bit, that now I get to see during sessions a baby on the bed, a toddler on the bed. And over this period of time, the toddler is peaceful sometimes, sometimes crying. You hear where she's calling to her husband to come and get the baby because she can't hear. She can't process what's going on, because as the treatments progress, her brain starts to change. And you can see in the sessions where she's struggling with even with just thinking her sentences through. Mm-hmm. And where she struggles with, okay, I need this connection to my grandpa. I need this connection to the spirit guides. And she starts changing very much in how the sessions progress from how do I keep cooking? How do I keep taking care of the baby? To what's it like on the other side? Mm. What is my grandfather going to do to help me cross over? What is it going to be like? Is it going to be cold? Do I need slippers? She starts asking very practical questions about crossing over. Can you ask my grandpa if it's okay if he will hold my hand so that I will feel touch? Can I feel touch? Is it okay if I ask him? Oh, I might have a bit of difficulty telling you the rest of my story. And her grandpa answers every single question with truth and with love, so that she feels less and less anxiety about separation. And then she asks more questions. I have a one-year-old. When I cross over, can you ask my grandpa, can you ask the guides, will I be able to be part of my child's life? Will I know my child when she's 2 and when she's 10 and when she's 30 and when she's 60 and when she's 90? And he answers every single question. Of course you will. Of course. And she's like, what do you mean, of course? Aren't I going to be far away?
It blows my mind that people can wrap their head around grandpa being there, mm-hmm. supporting her, knowing her, loving her, being at every doctor's appointment, and then the disconnect that happens when they ask about their own kid. It's like, well, if you genuinely believe that this is grandpa channeling and showing up, knowing you and loving you and seeing everything, how did you not draw the parallel to what you will be capable of doing in your own kid's life?
Two reasons. One, grooming. As you know, she has so much grooming that you fall back into that grooming all the time. So you'll learn a bit, but the grooming pulls you backwards, right? So one step forward, two steps back. And we can see through that whole period of almost 2 years, how she, in those sessions, how she really does take a step forward and then steps back. Mm-hmm. And then we also see where the chemo and the radiation are really destroying her brain. Mm-hmm. And that she asks questions and she'll go, I think I've asked that before. Oh, Karen, I'm so sorry. Oh, here in my notes. And she brings her notes. Oh, here in my notes. Oh, I have asked that question before. Oh, the answer was yes. Oh, and then you see the relief in her. Oh, if I just read my notes. Mm-hmm. She says, instead of coming to the sessions and asking you the same questions, she said, oh, I think I need to read my notes when I go to bed at night and I have anxiety. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wake up sometimes in the morning or after one of my treatments with chemo and I feel foggy. I should read my notes again, right? So you see in each of the sessions, the progression of what the treatments are doing to her. Mm-hmm. and you see, or, you know, and you see where the grooming pulls her back into some of these things. And I get to see how right to the very end, to the very last session I had with her, that that her husband has not changed, and that he still is leaving the baby with her, meeting his own needs, leaving the house. I don't believe in these sessions with this woman. He's extremely angry that she's spending money on seeing me. And she says to me each time, I don't care. It's my money. I worked full time. I have my own money. But he's angry that her money is going to her care. He wants the money and says things to her like, your daughter needs that money. You're spending her inheritance.
He doesn't like that she had any chance of becoming healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but what a wonderful guilt to use the daughter.
Yeah. And he says, how am I ever supposed to pay for her education when you're gone and I'm on my own, when you're blowing all this money on all this witchcraft and bullshit? But he lumps naturopaths in the bullshit, her osteopath in the bullshit, her massage therapist in the bullshit, her chiropractor in it. She really does a lot of things. All of her supplements that she's trying to take, the teas that she's buying, all of the better foods that she's trying.
That's what I mean. Any inkling to get healthier.
Yeah. And she does every single thing to get healthier. And I said to her, the guides say that you're writing every single thing down that you're doing to get healthy. And she goes, yeah, I am. They're all in my journals. And I said, that's good. I said, because the journals are going to be what your daughter reads
that you
when she's 16 and yeah. 12 and 20 and 30 and 40 and 50. And she reads that you tried every single thing possible on this planet known to you to fight for her, your life, because you loved her. Hmm. And I said, and those journals have to be given away. Don't give them to him. I said, you have to write in your will that those journals go to someone else that you trust, that will be so disinterested in them they won't even read them, but that they will give them to your daughter. And she goes, oh, that's my sister-in-law. She goes, my sister-in-law will do it. She says, I'll leave them with my sister-in-law. And I said, those journals are for your daughter.
I hope the moral of the story that people hear and can take away from this is being choosy with your partner and raising the bar for what love is. Because if you are listening to this story and you are sitting in your own shadow self or whatever you want to call it, being like, well, my partner's not that bad. In comparison, my partner's not that bad. He at least does, or she at least does. Like, keep raising the bar. Don't compare it to the lowest bar, because this is your future. Whether you get diagnosed with cancer, we are all aging. We are all going to lose some aspect of our previous independence, right? We might not all lose the ability to walk or the ability to find our speech, but we're going to lose something as we age. And if you can look at your partner and think, I am in good hands, then you've done a great job. If you look at that partner and you think, will my kids stick around to care for me? Will I have to move toward my children? Should I call my sister and move toward her? Then you are in the wrong fucking relationship. And there's just no two ways about that.
So this is very near the end of our sessions. And then one day I get an email from her saying that she can't see me, and that she doesn't think she'll ever be able to see me again, and that she has to say goodbye through email, and that she's being taken that day to hospice for end-of-life care, and that she won't have access to her computer anymore, and that she's not bringing her cell phone, she's not bringing devices, she's not doing anything, and that she understands the next step, and says in the email to me that she is now holding her grandfather's hand. And she knows that this is the beginning of that. And that's that email. And And then one day, I'm just having a cup of tea, and I had just made it in the kitchen, and I walked back into the treatment room, and she's sitting in my chair. And she looks beautiful. She's just sitting there, and she says, can you just sit with me? And I said, oh my God, hi, hon. Hey, Kehlani. And I go and I sit in another chair, and she sits in the chair beside me, you know, my room. So we're sitting side by side, and she says, can I sit here and have a cup of tea with you? And I said, yeah. And all of a sudden, she's holding like a little cup of tea. She says, I wanted to come back, she says, and tell you that without you, I don't know how I would have crossed with such beauty and with such peace, because I had so much anxiety and so much fear. And she said, everything that you taught me was so, so important that this about the spirit world being with us on earth. And she said, I finally understood how important it was when I went to the hospice that I had to believe that they are here with us on earth, not waiting for us on the other side, like
yeah,
we go there on our own. She said, I needed so badly at that point that day when I emailed you. She said, when I emailed and I was saying goodbye to you and you weren't holding my hand anymore, that you gave me the ability to meet my grandfather and to help me understand he was holding my hand and he held it as I went to the nursing or to the hospice. She said, because on the way to the hospice in the car and walking in the door and walking into my new room to die in, my husband would not hold my hand. And she said, so I was okay with that and I preferred it. She said, because I had known in my mind that the person I needed to hold my hand now wasn't him, and that he hadn't held my hand through life. And she said, it was at that moment that I realized what the guide said to me in the very first session, that he didn't love me and that I actually didn't love him. It wasn't love. And she said, I understood walking into the room at the hospice center to die, that we hadn't loved each other, that it had been all of the grooming and all of the beliefs and all of the hope that had kept us in that relationship. And she said, I'm so, so grateful. She said, so I wanted to sit with you today. And then I was quiet, and then she stopped talking, and Kelly, the whole room filled up, like with this most beautiful energy, not color, not, you know, somebody says, how would you describe it? Feelings. The room filled up and I filled up with just a complete sense of love and peace. And she looked at me and she went, wasn't that fun? Did I do a good job? And I said, yes, Kehlani, you did a beautiful job. And I said, I felt everything. And she goes, well, I learned to do that on the other side, to fill up a room and to fill up space with love. And I learned how to fill up a human being with the feeling. And she says, now I understand why you and Kelly are trying to teach the connection and the relationship to the spirit world, and why you keep using those two words.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. That's everything. That's how it ended, was in feelings and in connection.
Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.